You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to In Her Shoes. I'm Lindsay Peebles. This week, we're talking with Geraldine Chung, the founder of LCD. When Geraldine launched the brand in 2012, she didn't have a background in fashion. She had been running digital for Atlantic Records. And LCD began as an online destination. It showcased an inspired mix of emerging independent designers and grew fast. Within a few years, Geraldine went on to open a brick-and-mortar location in Los Angeles. But like so many other small businesses, LCD took a big revenue hit during the pandemic. And since that time, it's been difficult for a lot of small brands to regain stability, much less profitability. Earlier this month, Geraldine announced in a very candid and vulnerable Instagram post that she's shutting down the business. We wanted to talk with her about how she reached this decision and look back on what she learned in a decade of building and evolving the brand and its values. Thank you so much for being here. I'm really excited to talk with you because you have a really interesting entrepreneurial journey. Can you describe how you came up with the idea for LCD and how you went from working in the music business to launching an online retail brand?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I got into this industry with a lot of naivete. I did not have a retail background or a fashion background or a business background. And so it's almost in a way the only way to get into it, because if you knew better, you might not do it. It's just funny. I have so many friends now who are in retail who are like, why? I would have told you not to do this. It's crazy. It's like so hard to make money in this industry. So I was working at Atlantic Records at the time in New York. I was running their digital media department. And I had been before that a web developer for many years, so I'm very comfortable with the online world. I'm very tech savvy. And I had, when I first moved to New York, actually, I lived with a really good friend of mine, and she was a buyer at Barney's. So she kind of like sparked my love of fashion. And so, you know, living with her and hanging out with her made me like really appreciate fashion and design. And I was working, you know, at Atlantic Records. I'd always loved music and been really into it my whole life. But I was I was very burned out. And I was looking for the next thing to do. And so I was like, well, why don't I take my tech savvy and my love of fashion and marry the two together and, you know, start an online store? How hard could it be? But at that point, I just launched like over 200 websites. I was running e-commerce for, you know, a lot of musical artists. And so, you know, I really understood that side of the equation, but the fashion side of the equation, retail and buying and wholesale and margins and, you know, net terms and all those things were complete mystery to me. So I just went in without knowing anything, with a lot of high hopes. And yeah. Good intentions, I suppose.
Your love of fashion is super apparent, and I really admire that, because I think so many people have lost just an actual love and passion for it. And so I'm curious about where that came from.
I think I got it from my mom. She always dressed really... It's so funny, you know, when I was a kid, the cool way to dress was you'd wear like a t-shirt from The Gap or J. Crew, and you wanted, it was like that very all-American kind of look. And my mom would wear, you know, Versace and like, you know, Escada, like wild prints, leopard prints, you know, and amazingly, she keeps everything in pristine condition. So I am going to be, you know, raiding that wardrobe. So it kind of started there, just like opening my eyes to different ways of dressing. And I think as someone who has been overweight much of my life, that gave me a way to look at fashion in a different way. And I think that's why LCD has always kind of bought more interesting designers, is because I'm not looking at the things that fit everyone else. So that's why we're, you know, we were buying 69 and Miele's and Martine Rose. You're playing with volume. We're playing with size. We bought a lot of menswear. I bought a lot of menswear because that's all I could fit into. I couldn't wear a lot of, you know, female designers. So I think, you know, it was super personal. Just wanting something interesting that I could wear and realizing that a lot of normal, quote unquote, fashion just doesn't fit me.
How did you learn what it took to run a business? Because you're saying, obviously, you didn't understand some of those things. So did you have mentors along the way? Did you just ask people, like, what was that process like for you?
A friend of mine who was just a little bit further along in the journey than I was, but she had worked in retail as a buyer and in sales. And she was launching, her name is Christine Chang, and she was launching a kids brand called Boy and Girl. And she had started, I think, about 6 months prior to me. So we were like really kind of along the same path. She was just a little bit ahead of me, and she had more experience than I did in the fashion world. She was a buyer at Nike and ABC Home. And so I actually could go to her with a lot of questions that I just, like, you know, I'd be texting her under the table at a sales meeting, being like, what does terms mean? So she helped me a lot. I had another friend of mine was a fashion designer named Jen Cao. And she gave me a lot of direction and advice as well.
And what would you say during that period you remember just... I mean, that period obviously sounds like you were just trying to soak it all in and fully understand the business side of things that you didn't have previous knowledge to. But what would you say the biggest takeaway that really surprised you during that period of that you thought you really understood but didn't?
It was 2012. And I think, you know, obviously e-commerce had been a thing, but I think it was really taking off, and influencer culture was really taking off at that time. And I think that there was a lot for me of just like a lot of pride in not wanting to deal with influencers. I think I was influenced in part by a lot of my friends who were just like, ugh, why? But in hindsight, you know, I should have been more strategic about it and found people who were like aligned with me and that I really admired their style. And I think, you know, having that kind of friendship and partnership makes a big difference. As especially we were moving into a world where e-commerce was really dominated by Instagram. And now, you know, of course, TikTok. And that's not to say I didn't develop a lot of really great friendships with people who are influencers. But, you know, I think if I had embraced that a little bit earlier on, if I had embraced, honestly, PR is one of those things that are so intangible. And you feel like you're spending so much money without a lot of return. But in hindsight, I do feel like that would have been really critical in terms of just like making us known to the greater world, which helps in terms of like, if you're going on, you know, searching for something, you're like, oh, I'm going to go and see what so-and-so has on their website. Just like bringing you to the front of the mind.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the pandemic knocked the wind out of so many small businesses and changed that conversation. And also, I think, upped, you know, how people were producing on TikTok because they were just at home all the time. What did that impact look like specifically in the e-commerce space?
I think for us, you know, I think if you ask anyone, I'm very transparent in terms of, honestly, everything. Very transparent about my business. And I think as soon as, you know, the lockdown started to happen, I just took to Instagram and I was very open about all the struggles that we were having and how difficult it was, you know, how little sleep I was getting, how confusing the research was in terms of how do we get grants or PPP loans? How do we apply for things like the SBA EIDL loan or, yeah. And so I think people really resonated with the fact that I was being very vulnerable on Instagram and sharing, you know, how difficult it was to run a small business. And so during that time, we actually received a lot of support from people all over the country, honestly, shopping online and making sure that we survived.
Yeah. Give me some also context at that point. I mean, whether it's like start of pandemic or the past couple of years, when you say small business, how small was your business? Like, how many people were on your team? How many people were you working with as well?
In 2016, I opened my first brick and mortar and we started hiring, you know, sales staff. And then a year and a half later, we moved into a space on Abbot Kinney, which is, you know, a very well-known shopping street. So we had way more foot traffic and so we had to hire more people. And we almost simultaneously opened a second store in downtown LA in 2017. And so I think the biggest my team has ever gotten is maybe 8 or 9 people. But at the time during COVID, yeah, we still had the 2 stores. So I think we had maybe 8 people on payroll. Right. So small, okay. You know, I guess considered micro business, really.
For sure. What would you say the transition was like for you, obviously, coming from music world and then jumping into fashion, also managing people is obviously a very different world. What was that transition like for you?
It was definitely a huge transition, especially coming from, you know, I had a role as a manager at Atlantic Records, but I didn't really have to manage people so much, you know, like, especially in a tech world, you're like, you're assigning projects and people are kind of like just doing their own thing. And then they're, you know, it's either whether or not it's submitted on time or not. I'm sure in larger tech companies, it's a lot more complicated than that. But, you know, in my past roles, it hasn't been a lot of management. So it was kind of a rude awakening just having to learn a whole new industry and learning all the ways that you have to manage people and personalities in retail and in, you know, social media and encouraging people to be, you know, take up a kind of voice on social media or encouraging sales staff to be really warm to people when they come in. But, you know, we're not the kind of store where we put up our nose at people because they don't know who Martine Rose is. And so, you know, it was really developing a culture which, you know, I had never done before, but was, you know, definitely one of the more fun things about starting your own business is to be able to establish that. What are your set of values? What is your culture? You know, how do you treat people when they walk in the door?
I mean, speaking of values, I know that for so many young designers, they're often asked about sustainability because we talk about consumption in designers and fashion overall just selling so much. How did you navigate questions around that, both from a financial aspect and just environmental perspective?
I mean, it's funny that you ask that because a lot of times I have in the past 11 years questioned, what am I doing? Why am I putting more stuff out in this world when we don't need any more stuff? So yeah, it's always been, not always, but, you know, increasingly over the past 11 years been coming to the forefront in terms of, you know, who do you choose to buy? Who do you choose to support? Where do I put my dollars when I'm buying for the store? And even, you know, things like when we do our shopping bags, are we making them with recycled paper? You know, just, it does trickle down all the way, you know, in terms of all aspects of the business. When we ship things out, we are reusing Amazon boxes instead of buying fresh boxes. So in terms of, you know, the buying strategy, obviously we've carried Colleen Estrada for a long time, and she's such a champion for sustainability in fashion. And Mara Hoffman, for example, who is super inspiring to me in terms of how she just, you know, she had a super thriving business and she just realized, you know what, this is not serving me. This is not good for the environment. I am going to torch it all and start from scratch and just do like what feels right to me. So, you know, she's super inspiring to me. And, you know, it's not like the number one thing that we look at when I buy. I always say we, but it's me. I don't know. It's like a weird thing that we women do, but it's me. it's my company. When I buy, it's not the first thing I look at, but it's probably, you know, number two in terms of what is this designer doing in terms of thinking about sustainability? Are they, you know, being conscientious about the factories they work with and where they're producing and what, you know, are they using recycled cotton when they can or organic cotton? And I found that, you know, because I work with so many designers are very like-minded and very conscientious and very aware of the world that we live in, they are increasingly using, you know, organic cotton, they're using lyocell, they're using dead stock. So it's definitely become a bigger and bigger part of the business.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
So 2022, you had pretty strong sales and honestly, we're in a good place. What actually led you, though, to then decide to shutter the business?
So, you know, coming out of COVID, everybody had money in their pockets. They were ready to go out. They wanted to shop. And it was just kind of a banging year. It's just we came out of it so strong. We had so much local support. It was super wonderful. And I was feeling really positive about our outlook. And so we decided to move into a bigger space in our building. And then I, you know, was buying a ton of inventory because I'm like, double the space, double the inventory. People are shopping. We're going to do this. And then things started to taper down. Inflation worries came. It's funny because the macroeconomic conditions of American economy really do impact us small businesses, which, I mean, I didn't really expect it would affect someone so small as LCD, but it really does. When people, there are rumors of recession, sales slow down. When there's rumors of inflation, sales slow down. And so I went into fall of 22 with way too much inventory, way, way, way too much inventory. And so we were doing secret sales. We were inviting friends over to just like buy things at wholesale because I just had so much inventory to pay for. I ended up blowing our entire like excess. You know, I had applied for a massive EIDL loan, like the disaster loan that the SBA was offering during COVID. And we were sitting on a nice chunk of change there. And instead of, I had to spend it all on this inventory that I had ordered and wasn't able to sell. So heading into 2023, we just like had too much inventory, tons of invoices. And then January, February, people just, January, February is always slow months for us, you know, after the highlights of November, December, but it was kind of bitterly slow in January, February. And it started making me really worry about, you know, are we going to survive this? This is too chaotic. Things are up, things are down. And I started really looking at our business strategy and realizing that we were losing a lot of money on e-commerce. It's just too difficult, really, to compete as a small business because, you know, we don't have volume when we're ordering items. So, you know, it costs us per garment way more to shoot something. We have photography fees, model fees, retouching, stylist fees, and then like data entry, all that. So, you know, if we only bought five of something, the cost per item is just too high to run e-commerce. So I started, you know, kind of retreating from e-commerce and just focusing on our brick and mortar, which has always done really well when we, you know, being on Abbot Kinney, which is such a great shopping street. And so, you know, things started picking up for us again because I was really cutting costs. I was, you know, as sales teams were leaving, I just didn't rehire those positions to try to really keep things tight. But And in fact, April and May, we were profitable for the first time in 11 years. So, you know, I felt like everything I was doing was correct in terms of the business strategy. And, you know, I was buying a lot less inventory. My mom ended up getting sick with cancer in February. So, you know, kind of, she's totally fine now, which is why I can say it was perfect timing because that was market. And I ended up not buying a lot of merchandise because I was busy dealing with my mom. And it turns out buying less merchandise was the right amount of merchandise. And so when we hit April, May, June, we did really well and I was profitable. And I was like, we've got it. I figured it out. And then the summer, everybody went to Europe. Everybody went to Europe. We would look, like, walk out on the street and just be like, where the hell is everyone? Like, it was empty. And so the one thing I couldn't control, you know, kind of happened, that nobody was shopping anymore. And that's when it kind of just became really very real.
What has that process been like for you to grieve and process and be okay with the fact that you spent so long with this business, but also have to let it go?
It's really not easy as someone who's accustomed to success, you know, like always been able to work hard and figure it out and do well. And, you know, I have a good friend who taught me this term, which is, of course, now I'm totally blanking. Oh, it's the sunk cost fallacy. I'm probably going to get it wrong, but it's something to do with like, for example, when you're waiting for a table at a hot restaurant, right? You're like, you wait for 15 minutes. You're like, you know, it's been 15 minutes. Let's wait another 15 minutes. And then at a certain point, you've sunk so much time into it that you just can't leave. You've been like, I waited an hour and now like I'm too far gone. Like I have to eat here now. So it's kind of that, you know, like I've worked in this business so much. I put so much of my money into it. And like, it's got to work. There's got to be a way for me to make it work. And so it was really, really hard to wrap my head around that fallacy that it's just like, dude, it's not going to work. So yes, that process was a long time coming. Honestly, I think it started maybe a year ago when we had some employee drama and I was so sick to my stomach about like, being so worried about taking care of everyone and making sure everybody was okay, and to the point where I was ill. And that's when I realized it's not that they're not worth it, but like this business is not worth me being sick.
What advice would you offer now, you know, in hindsight to people who look to, you know, to you, to LCD as a model for something that they would like to emulate, or for anyone thinking of following just an entrepreneurial path in fashion?
Yeah, I think my advice would be definitely ask a lot of questions. Definitely try really hard, much harder than I did, to seek out real mentorship. And not just in terms of like the basics, don't be proud, like really, really ask for business advice, because this is, it's a business. And, you know, some people would get really lucky and they will just hit all the right notes and just like take off. But as we all know, like, was it 98% of small businesses fail within the first 2 years? So I would say, you know, don't have an ego, ask a lot of questions, put yourself out there and, you know, get proper business advice, or if not, also a proper business partner.
So tell me, where's your head at around your next chapter?
I don't know. I think that I've just been flagellating myself with retail for so long that I've become like a masochist. I really kind of love retail, even though like the maths don't work. Like I was saying in my closing announcement, the maths really don't work, but there's something really magical about retail. And I'm really praying that, you know, the everything is cyclical. So I'm praying that there's going to be a way that retail will live again, because how sad would it be if we were in a world where all you could do is shop on Amazon?
I really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks for listening to In Her Shoes. Today's episode was produced and edited by Nishat Kerwa. Our engineers are Jelani Carter and Brandon McFarlane. I'm your host, Lindsay Peebles. In Her Shoes is a production of The Cut and New York Magazine.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.